Welcome to Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change. I'm your host, Celine Diaris, and with me today is Reem Hassani. Reem is the Chief Brand Officer and co-founder of Numi Tea. Numi Tea, for those of you who aren't familiar, is a nearly two-decade-old beautiful brand in the tea space, and Reem and her brother Ahmed are the co-founders of this business. Reem, I'm so excited to have you today and to have us have an opportunity to dive into the beautiful story of Numi and all of the incredible accomplishments of this brand and the company as a whole and how it is being a steward in the natural products industry.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So why don't we start with, I think, what is super interesting, and I alluded to it by acknowledging that this is a company founded by siblings. Tell us a little bit about how did Numi come to be?
So Numi, we founded Numi in 1999 at the edge of the Grand Canyon. So we were on a family vacation. My brother and I had been doing various things in our life. I was, I had studied engineering and then shifted to art. That was my passion. And he was, and I was getting my master's in fine arts at the time. He was a, psychology, drama major, shifted to photography, was living in Prague in the Czech Republic and had opened up some tea houses. And so somehow we were both at this crossroads in our life where we wanted to do something different. And we had always discussed importing this dried lime that we drank as children. We're both from Iraq. And that's the tea of hospitality there. It's called Numi. And so, you know, we'd always said, oh, somebody should bring this to the States. And then right then and there, we both decided to do it. We both decided to do it together. And so we called the company Numi after that inspirational lime from our childhood. And we sort of naturally took on different roles. Of course, two people had to do everything as a startup. Our father helped us fund the business with the home equity line of credit, which was pretty amazing.
Wow.
And and then he did all the sourcing because he had a lot of experiences in tea houses. And I painted all the original paintings on the packaging. So I was an artist, and I'm still am. And those were inspired by photographs he'd taken because he had traveled the world. So that's kind of how it launched. And with that launch, we brought in unique, we had sort of an initial philosophy right from the get-go in terms of the quality of our teas and the innovation of our teas. So because he had been used to drinking loose leaf tea in tea houses, he thought, wow, this is sacrilegious, one, to be drinking tea out of a tea bag, and two, to be cutting it, you know, using these tiny little dust particles, you know, that are basically sweepings. So we pushed and pushed our suppliers to put the largest, fullest leaf in the bags, was first of all. So we had a fuller leaf in the tea bag. We also didn't understand the concept of flavorings, you know, so why, you know, let nature speak for itself. Why do you want to spray it with all kinds of, you know, watermelon and peach flavoring? So we didn't get that. So we stuck to the real ingredients, the real fruits, flowers, spices. And so we had to come up with all kinds of ingenious ways to scent our Earl Grey with the bergamot orange. So we would age it with the orange. We would scent the jasmine, the green tea with jasmine flowers rather than all these different sprays that people were using. And then they would overpower the tea. So they're using very poor quality tea and then they're just masking it with the flavoring. So all that was part of our initial, you know, kind of stance declaration on the quality and the flavor and the taste. And we just kept it very simple. Our first 9 teas were just single ingredients. Again, letting nature speak for itself. And then we introduced herbs like rooibos and honeybush, and they were very popular in Europe at his tea houses, but they didn't exist here. So we launched rooibos into the country 21 years ago. And then of course, it was a huge trend. So we've been on that ride ever since.
Well, you guys are such innovators. You continuously are bringing new ideas forward into the tea world, which I have deep respect for. And I am personally a very big fan of your Earl Grey tea. So thank you for making it so delicious. I like it hot with a bit of cream. So some of those interesting aspects of, as an entrepreneur, you wear multiple hats. And I love, like, when you come to visit your office, you can see some of that art that is the design for the original boxes. And I didn't realize that they had come from photographs that Ahmed had taken. So, I mean, what, and how artistic both of you are. How interesting that with this artist soul, you have become such successful business people. Mm-hmm. That's really a wonderful accomplishment. So kudos.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah. And I mean, to riff off of that, I think, you know, I personally didn't have any business experience, nor did I ever think I wanted to be a business person. And Ahmed, you know, had done the tea houses, but generally speaking, wasn't in that line of education, you know. And I think being artists has been really a gift for our business, because one, it allows us to always look for solutions. So we don't, you know, business is challenging, and one can either get stuck in a rut of this isn't working and that's not working, and, you know, that mode of thinking, versus always looking for solutions. Always, you know, what an artist does is it envisions things that aren't there, that don't exist. They envision the possible, or they may even envision the impossible, what people may think is impossible. So, it becomes like, you know, basically the sky's the limit. You can do whatever you want. You know, there's no tying you to anything you either studied was the norm. Not to say you can't, you know, use tools and budgets and, of course, all that.
All of that, yes.
It's really important. So, yeah, I mean, I think I bounced my first check in the first year, so Ahmed kind of banned me from managing finance. But, so yeah, I think that, and then of course, you know, all the values that you bring to the business as a human, you're not limited or tied to old ways of doing things. You're always being creative in terms of how you can run your business, which is a fantastic opportunity to have. And then, of course, not to mention the innovation that you can do on the product side. You're always innovating, looking for something new, looking for something different. You're not copying what
right.
I've done. And then I would say finally that you don't necessarily have the fear. Sometimes people ask me, like, what's the secret of success or whatnot? And I say, I don't think we had a fear of failure. I had more of a fear of failure than I had. I'm sorry. I had more of fear of a success than I had fear of failure.
I relate to that. That's interesting. I love what you're saying about sort of the artist spirit is this more boundless perspective, and that there is a curiosity and a willingness to explore and innovate. And that's actually more satisfying. And there's probably even more comfort in that approach for people who are artistically inclined than to sort of be told, here's your box, make sure you stay inside it.
Exactly.
Except it's a box of tea, so you do want to stay inside of a very nice box of tea.
Yeah. Oh, well, and then now we're moving into new categories, which we're also very comfortable doing. So, you know, I think the folks that have come to know me that, you know, sometimes are a little you know, disheveled by these, not just, you know, entrepreneurs are always kind of a little bit, you know, outside the norm. There's a little bit,
yeah, know, they're edgy people. Folks. You have to be to yeah. make it happen.
But, that creative side, you know, doesn't work for everybody. And it is the most comfortable for us. And, you know, I would say, like, on that innovation side, you know, generally the way marketing would do it would be to study what the trends are and, you know, kind of go a deep dive and look what the trends are and then try and follow those trends versus creating the trend. So it's a big difference. Then you have nothing to really study except, you know, what the world has to offer. And then you're just trying to find the things between the cracks, literally. So
would you say that part of that innovative process is like a listening? Like, are you listening to inspiration that's coming in versus sort of scanning the horizon and seeing what's sort of hinted at by what others are doing? It sounds like that's kind of a juxtaposition, inner inspiration versus external locus of inspiration.
Yeah, I would say it's a both and.
Yeah.
You're also seeing what's going on around you, you know, trends like plant-based, and you know, your ears and eyes are just open.
Right.
You know, and you're also looking at other cultures. I mean, especially one who is, you know, grown up multiculturally, we travel and we're always looking at to see what other cultures are doing that, you know, we don't do here in the States. And that's an inspiration too.
Is there an example of something that you all brought into your company's product offering that was inspired from something you saw happening elsewhere in another culture?
Oh, yeah. Turmeric, which is now big, we launched a line of turmeric teas before anybody else had done that. And I think Ahmed was traveling in Thailand at the time and just said, everybody's drinking turmeric. And so we, boom, you know, it took us like 3 months, 6 months, just put it on the shelf in 4 different flavors. And then, you know, then subsequently we've launched a turmeric shot and a turmeric powdered drink. A latte and a concentrate, moving forward with that. Pu'er tea is a tea from China, which is a fermented black tea. Oh, there's fermented green and also black. And that was very popular in China, about 10 years ago when we launched it. It didn't really exist here either. So a number of things like that we keep kind of stealing from other countries.
Cool. Well, we appreciate it because obviously you bring us something new, and that's always a desirable thing when one likes to try different beverages to fill one's day. One of the things that we've been talking about is sort of the artist soul, the artist spirit, and we've said briefly painted the original boxes, and you've had an influence as the chief brand officer, I presume, in sort of how the brand is represented artistically, expressively on the boxes, which is such important real estate in the food industry. Can you share a little bit about what the role of art and creativity has been in your relationship to building Numi, specifically what you've been sort of tasked with bringing to the brand?
Sure. I think besides the creative thinking aspect in terms of problem solving, my major role in the company is what you see and read in the brand. So, what you see and read. So all the naming pretty much comes from me and the team as well. That's a collaboration. All the visuals is my eye in terms of the photo direction and the stylizing and all of that aspect. Of course, we work with agencies, and we just are launching a brand refresh this year, which is a major departure from where we were before. So that's a collaboration with them. Of course, they brought the ideas, and then we work with them on that. And I think as an artist, I hope that one has more empathy and more sensitivity. And so generally when I'm working on copywriting and a look and feel, I'm putting myself in the consumer's shoes. I always kind of listen to what is being said and imagine myself as the other person reading it. So it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's just the flavor of the tea or whether it's talking about the brand, you know, one goes into a zone. Anybody who's an artist understands that, goes into a zone and they just kind of feel it through and it comes out of them. So I guess that, yeah, everything that you've read in the brand and everything that you've seen kind of has come out of myself and the people that I work with.
Wonderful.
Thank you.
I love that. Now, do you have a creative sort of expression that's personal to you that is outside of your functions and roles at the company?
Yes. So I also have a studio and I paint. My work goes from mixed media to landscape painting to abstract painting and sometimes socio-political work. So it just kind of spans the horizon. And I try and get there when I can. And I also am involved with a art group, two mentors in Italy. They're South African, they live in Italy, and I've been working with them for, gosh, I think 25 years. And so I go to Italy every 2 years and do art workshops there. And they're more spiritual, actually, because it's art, it's seen as art as a spiritual practice. So it becomes like a meditation. And it is a meditation for me. Yeah.
How beautiful. Well, thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. When we talk about a business like Numi, which has sort of set a high standard for itself from its inception, you were organic from the beginning and have been. You've also focused on the connection to tea and water in the places that you are sourcing your teas and for the folks that are helping to harvest. And you created a foundation. Mm-hmm. So could you share about like what inspired you and Ahmed to step forward with creating this foundation? And then let's hear a little bit about some of the impacts that you all have been having in these communities since you started doing that work. And can you let us know when that began?
Yeah, so the foundation has been a big part of the company for a while now. We started in 2009, and the original impetus for the foundation was to help Iraqi children who are have been victims of several wars now. That was the original idea, was to help the Iraqi kids out of trauma. And it seemed difficult. We were trying to work with different organizations to try and make that happen. And they were probably going through one of the different wars. And so we ended up instead starting the foundation here in Oakland, which is our backyard. And we created a curriculum called Numi, Nature Underlies My Inspiration. Hmm. And it was a gardening, social studies, and art curriculum that we, because we knew that the inner city kids in Oakland were lacking some of these kind of experiential learning programs. So we brought those to our backyard, to kids in Oakland and now San Rafael. And I think we have now impacted about 15,000 different children through that curriculum, which has been amazing. So that was the first. Last year, we're able to work with an Iraqi nonprofit, which our cousin leads, and have brought summer school programs to children who are at risk, orphans or war victims who are at risk of dropping out of school. So they have a summer school, which gets them back up to speed. So we're able finally to go back to Iraq and help on that front. So in terms of education, that's what we've done. The Together for Hope project started, I guess, about 6 years ago when we were, kind of looking for something to kind of overarch the brand in terms of what we can do in terms of cause marketing. And actually my husband was working with us and he basically asked me, he said, you can't drink tea without water. And you certainly can't drink tea without clean water. And there are almost a billion people on the planet who don't have access to clean, safe drinking water. So that became like a no-brainer kind of aha moment. And so what we ended up doing was as we would kind of go sourcing into our farming communities, because we do a lot of direct sourcing, water came up as a main issue. And we always asked them, what do you need? And water came up as a main issue. So our first project was in Madagascar. And we basically raised about $85,000 in 6 months, and they get their water from the dirty river where the animals are defecating, people are going to the bathroom, and that's where they get their water. The children are, you know, sick all the time. So we ended up building 23 wells and brought clean, safe drinking water to these communities, about 12,000 people for the first time.
Amazing.
Yeah. So that's, yeah. So sorry, it's not 12,000, but 5,000 people. So that's been amazing. And then we expanded the program to India, where we get our black teas from. They have wells, but their wells are contaminated, and then they have the latrines near the wells. So there's all, it's a kind of an infrastructure issue and more of a training issue. So we worked with Women's Earth Alliance here in Berkeley, and they have people on the ground that started implementing training programs. And what was great about that is that the woman really got involved, the moms, and they started coming up with songs and writing t-shirts for the kids to wash their hands and put their sandals on when they go into the latrines and things like that. And they basically, within a year, got rid of about 80% of the waterborne illnesses, and kids were going back, you know, they had less time off of school than they were.
Wow. That's extraordinary.
Yeah. And so lastly, what we've just done recently, you know, with this COVID-19 pandemic outbreak that we've had, is we just shifted, and we've connected back to the families that we supply the education to, and have firstly, we fixed a Oakland Unified School District food truck, so they can deliver food, and that's delivering, you know, over 15,000 meals to people. And then there's a lot of people who, you know, are either recent immigrants, have language barriers, don't have cars to drive to pick up lunches, because, you know, they rely on these lunches to feed their kids. And so we've been doing weekly organic produce deliveries to families. And so we're up to about 550 families and over 10,000 pounds of produce.
Wow.
And of course you can imagine that, you know, this is what it's revealed, the inequities of our society, that people who are less healthy are getting sicker. And so this is organic produce, you know, maybe for their first times to receive that. And we're hoping to expand this throughout the Bay Area.
So I love that. And where are you sourcing produce? Are you working with farmers in the community?
So apparently what's happening is that farmers that were producing produce for restaurants were throwing their produce away. So we're connecting the dots, receiving that at cost, if at lowest cost, and then just giving it. And we're hoping to turn it into a sustainable model where families can pay it like $15 for groceries for a week and be able to get organic groceries. And then also we're looking at it being culturally relevant, so that each family can get, you know, culturally relevant foods. And mostly we're supplying to Hispanic Americans, Asian Americans, and African American families in inner city.
That is so beautiful, that pivot. Thank you for what you're doing. That we are all seeing those shocking images of piles of potatoes and squash just languishing in the field. To your point, the whole food service industry and large institutional, with the shutdowns of universities and businesses, just dried up. And our whole infrastructural system is designed for these two very different ways of moving food into the American plate, from the grocery, which is a completely different supply network from this institutional supply, which I am struck by, as we all are watching, how this could be a beautiful opportunity for us to do some deep rethinking around how are we managing food in our society, especially the inequity of access to fresh, healthy food. To your point, clearly those who have less are affected more. And that's been true for a long time, but it's kind of hard to ignore when it is so front and central in both the news and in those and which what we see in our local communities. It's quite a huge opportunity for this level of light to be brought to this challenge.
Yeah, exactly.
And how, when you say you all are looking at building this out as potentially a longer term construct, can you say a little bit about who else are you partnering with to accomplish that?
Well, we're looking at, I'm not sure, hopefully it's going to go through. Apparently it's very close. We're looking at a grant from Salesforce.com of about $1 million to keep pushing this out. So
nice.
Yeah.
Well, we all have our fingers crossed because this is so worthy. And we know that will go totally in the right direction if you get that resource. So may that be.
Yes, may it. Thank you.
Yes. I want to just give a quick re-identity of you are listening to Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories. I'm Celine Diaris, and with me today is Reem Hassani, the Chief Brand Officer and co-founder of Numi Tea. One of the things that I think is interesting about you is that you're a mom, you're an artist, and you're a unintended businesswoman of great accomplishment. So how have you, and what would be some things you could share about how you find life work balance, both inside of our new experience, but also just in the larger theme of your journey in the progression of Numi's success? How have you found your own sense of balance in all of this?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if I have any answers or secrets or anything. We're always learning balancing every step of the way. I guess I tend to, in some ways, I don't want to say compartmentalize, but I divide my day up into different parts, and that really helps because a lot of people wake up and they're on their phones or computers right away. I generally don't even know where my phone is. So for me, I can't understand how you can just kind of have the phone next to your head or whatever. So I think that helps in terms of kind of grounding the day. And, I generally I'm up earliest these days. I'm up earliest and we have a hot tub and I sit and I meditate in the hot tub and listen to the birds and feel the wind and try and get as present as possible. I've been into Eckhart Tolle these days, and so I listen to a meditation from him, or read this book, or I just simply stretch in there, or, you know, so that's how I start my day. And then I'm a cleaner, so I clean, tidy up the home and make breakfast for everybody. So just as it's family time, basically, as everybody wakes up. And then when I'm working, I'm working. So I just really focus on the thing that I'm doing at that moment. So I'm just really present in what I'm working on as much as possible. These days, you know, with my kids around, there's a lot of distraction. and then I do try and paint, a good hour or two a day. And that helps me tremendously. So it helps me kind of just, you know, let out things that may be bothering me, or just also have an outlet of expression and creativity. So, and then when it's nighttime, it's nighttime. So it's for my family. So I really kind of don't, you know, working and on the phone and all that kind of stuff and doing everything at the same time just doesn't work for me in terms of balance. And I also love to cook. So, cooking is also a creative aspect. So just being able to come home, you know, or being able to, you know, 5-6 o'clock start cooking dinner, or, you know, cooking lunch or whatever, all that gives me balance, I guess. And then, like I mentioned, I do retreats and workshops in the summer with my artist teachers, and That just gets me away.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I love the way you start your day. That is very inspirational. Sounds very calming and grounding. And just, I love the role that nature mm-hmm. plays in sort of being part of that tuning that you're giving yourself as how you get your day started. Mm-hmm. That's really beautiful.
Thanks. Yeah. But you know, any tips, I'm open to more tips.
I'm receiving those as tips for me. I'm sitting here thinking about, I have some time off next week, and one of my intentions is kind of give myself a little bit of a reset. Because I've been so full on when we were planning the Women Leading Regeneration from an in-person to an online event. And thank you again for being a part of that. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's going to be really nice to deeply unplug and do a little recalibration.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because my husband's been building this amazing treehouse for our boys. And so he has to go climb up the treehouse and then come back, and he's just by himself doing it. And it's been a good month and a half. And so I offered to help. And so, it's funny because I'm down there just chopping wood, like axing the wood with whatever they call the machine, major table saws, and handing them up to him. And then our little 3-year-old is also kind of there pulling up the bucket and pulling the pieces of wood up. So it's been really fun. And the other day we got into a little squabble, and I said, should we go out and chop wood? Like, yeah. But the great thing about that is that, you know, you're just focused on that one thing, and that really just gets you into the present. And then that's all there is.
That's gardening for me.
Yeah.
I have to spot the weeds between the things I want. And so that is one of my escapes, is to just be and watch the worms wiggle when I disturb them. So, I love the treehouse. I will look forward to seeing a picture perhaps when it's complete.
Okay. Yeah.
So, you know, being in the natural products industry, Numi has also been involved in a lot of forward thinking towards its impact. And I'm particularly impressed with what you all have accomplished with your packaging and the tea wraps and bags. Can you share a little about that journey and what inspired you all to help? Because you helped set up the Climate Collaborative and mm-hmm. OSC2 to kind of galvanize more collaboration around these challenges that one company taking it on all by themselves may or may not be that realistic.
Mm-hmm. So Ahmed, my brother, started, well, he co-founded OSC Squared, One Step Closer to an Organic Sustainable Community. And I think their first project was packaging, because they, and we had already been looking for packaging alternatives. So we had kind of pushed and pushed and pushed our everything that goes into making a box of tea, which includes the tea itself, which is all organic and fair trade, mostly, which speaks to the humanitarian aspect of it. And then you have an outer wrap, a wrapper, let's just call it, mm-hmm. which has, you know, multi-barriers, foil, paper, poly, barriers. So we kept pushing the film suppliers to reduce the waste components there. And so we reduced, we used about 50% post-consumer waste in the paper, and then we reduced one of the poly layers. So we kept pushing the envelope, literally, on that. Our boxes are made out of 85% post-consumer waste. We use soy-based inks. So everything, all the components, we just wanted to be as environmentally responsible as we could. You know, that's as much as we could do. And then we ask those who use our packaging products to be thoughtful and recycle. So So everything that was in our packaging, we took the staples out of the tea, the tag and the, you know, the string and all that stuff. So, once, they started OSC Squared, they created a packaging coalition right away to try and, confront the packaging issue head on. And so it was a team. And because it was a team of different manufacturers, they can push the film suppliers even further. And so one thing we did not want to do was have a GMO-based polymer solution, which is out there. And they're made out of GMO corn or GMO sugar. So we didn't want to pursue that. So we had to continue to pursue something that would work. So at this point, I think we have a eucalyptus sugarcane birch product that is a resin that creates a resin that has replaced the plastic layer of that wrapper, and while still maintaining the freshness, which is pretty amazing. So now it's all plant-based. It's commercially compostable. We're still trying to get the certification on it being backyard compostable. And you know, if you think about it, it is a huge feat, because if you go to the grocery store and you're buying an energy bar, you're buying a bag of rice, or you're buying whatever you're buying, none of that stuff can be put into either your recycling bin or your compost bin. So those are ending up in landfills. So as a natural products industry, you know, bringing on more and more companies so we can bring the price down, is basically what we have to do. And I think now more than ever, seeing, you know, that we can actually make huge leaps together on what we want to make leaps on, and let's just do it, you know, instead of wait, what are we waiting for?
Totally, totally true. Excuse me. It's funny that I said OSC too, because I send emails all the time. And so I just see it as, and I know it's OSC Squared. It's funny. It was like, oh, I said OSC too. But OSC Squared has been so effective in helping to bring a lot of the industry players to lean into these kinds of impacts. What's on the horizon? What else is there that you all can do? I mean, it feels like you're doing so much. What's another kind of goal or objective in how you want to continue to improve?
Well, you know, we joined the Climate Collaborative, and you're to make three different climate commitments. And I think ours are around packaging, agriculture, and policy, and transportation maybe is one of them. But policy, we're trying to do work on that front. So we have an in-house person who's our director of sustainability, and she is writing letters to senators. She's doing brown bag lunches. You know, she's really trying to push the policy front. And I think that's a really good next wave to impact those that are, you know, creating the laws.
Absolutely. What types of policy are you all interested in having some influence around?
From my knowledge, it's around carbon offsetting and carbon emissions, and they think what's allowable and what's not allowable. That's another thing that we're trying to do as well, is to go carbon neutral by 2023. Mm. So we're making that commitment and then pushing for policies around that.
Excellent. Well, such inspiration, because obviously you all have been using the platform of your company to do a lot more than just sell tea.
I don't know if we're really a tea company or what we are.
Well, you definitely are a tea company, and you are definitely a company with a very high ideal around how to be of a positive effect, both in your local community. As we were talking about the foundation, I was more familiar with the water aspects. I remember Ahmed talking a lot about that a few years ago, and had forgotten about the educational piece. But the educational piece, that is so interesting. What was that about for you all? Why did you want to bring more educational opportunities into different communities? What inspired that?
Well, I think in general, you know, when we literally boil it down, you know, the three things that we do in the brand, our pillars are to create opportunities for people to thrive. So whether it's fair trade or fair labor or the educational programs, or even our direct sourcing partnerships, because we've had those for 20 years, some of them are 20 years old. And that just allows for loyalty, trust, and partnership, those relationships. So that's one pillar of ours that, you know, no matter what we do, we're just trying to create opportunities for people, you know, to kind of to live out their potential. So that's where the educational piece came in, is that, you know, we were fortunate enough to have that and grow up here in the United States and, you know, have good education. And if a child can have that and see that there are opportunities and they have choices, that's, it makes a huge difference in their life.
It does, doesn't it? It's game changing.
Mm-hmm. And then the second is regenerating the planet. So anything we can do to regenerate the planet, in terms of our packaging and our emissions and, you know, what we could be responsible for as a business, because you are producing a lot, we're doing that. And then the third is promote healthy living. So all our products are just trying to promote a healthy lifestyle. And then the Together for Hope Water Project is about promoting healthy living, so people can have vitality and wellness. So so that's kind of, you know, in a nutshell, what we figured out what we're doing after all these years.
Well, it's beautiful, and there's so much potential for others to emulate that kind of leadership, because I'm sure just like the work that I do, we want people to take this on as well, and to activate these types of initiatives in their context. And to the more that we can flower in multiple places, the better the whole is.
Exactly. And we just, you know, I mentioned that we are launching our brand refresh this year, and our new tagline is activating purpose. So our goal and our hope is to activate others to activate their purpose. And so, you know, one good deed inspires others. So if you can be a sort of a beacon of change, and our higher purpose is to catalyze change in the world, then you can have others also make change in their lives for the better. So hopefully what we'll learn from this whole pandemic is that we can build better in the future. We can, you know, use our creativity and our higher purpose to, you know, make this a better world. So
totally. How is that translated in your company culture? How are these kind of values expressed in for the team and with the team?
Well, you know, we have now, over the last, gosh, it's been 10 weeks, I guess, because we keep every week, make a declaration of how long it's been that we've been in, shelter in place and out of the office. So we have a weekly team meeting. And what's been amazing is, what I would boil it down to is gratitude and appreciation. And when you have a culture we have this thing, I guess it's biweekly or monthly, called monkey picks. And silly, but because back in the day, when tea grew on trees and they were high before they were pruned into bushes, you know, there's different legends. And one of the legends is that monkeys were climbing the trees and they would, be picking the tea, and then, I don't know, the monks or something would be throwing stones at them, so that the leaves would fall. So lots of high, if you're familiar with a premium tea, a lot of the premium teas are called monkey picked. So our monkey picks are, is a sort of tradition at NUMMI where we recognize people who are doing a really great job. It's kind of morphed into sort of a thank you for helping me out, and thank you for making me laugh, and thank you for making me smile. And what I've noticed just in these, in our teamly, our weekly calls, is this spirit of appreciation and this family spirit. So we have, you know, four main values that the internal company culture goes by, and then, you know, that we also have for external customers. And one is celebrating people, so really celebrating our differences. And we have, you know, I just love watching the quirkiness of everybody, because everybody's just being themselves. And I think they have the freedom to be themselves. Nobody has to kind of watch their backs or, you know, tiptoe around anything. So that's a really beautiful, I think, quality and value to have as a company, is to celebrate your people. Second is nurturing growth. So nurturing growth is, you know, a culture of learning and change. And we've talked a lot about that, and learning and growth and change and pivoting and moving, and just a culture of learning. Third is embracing possibility. So it really speaks to the idea of entrepreneurship and each person owning their little piece of the business as if it's their own, and engaging in the creative aspects of looking for new possibilities of how to figure things out, and asking what if I did it this way, what if I did it that way, and you know, seeing what's realistic. So that's the third. And then the fourth is be the change, which is you know, rather than pointing fingers and looking for blame, just make the change that you want to see in the world. So those values we've came up with them. It was a big, huge process and involved the whole company. And it's been about 10 years now that we've had these values, and they're still there. Mm. And it feels like a family. You know, we have our ups and downs. We're not always
sometimes all families do.
but it's working, and I see it working more than ever now, where we really have to stick together and be there for one another and support one another, and not get into, you know, just assuming positive intent, you know. So there's a lot of moments where we've stopped and rethought who we are, and then put them down on paper. And so assuming positive intent has been one of them, and focusing on what matters has been another one. So
I love that positive intent. I am very much that kind of gal. I think when we decide what matters and we put more energy into the creation of that, as opposed to in an oppositional relationship to things we may not like, I personally think it's a much more energizing way of co-creating, of helping birth new outcomes, because you're focusing on what you would like to see and create, as opposed to that which you don't like and would like to see go away.
Right.
So I it's interesting. You're like a case study as a company that this has been, you know, woven into the culture, and I assume, you know, people sort of come in and learn more about how the company operates as part of their onboarding to be on the team. I would assume that's an important part of being on the NUMMI staff.
Yeah, I think sometimes people are very surprised when they come and start working with us, and they're like, wow, everybody's so nice. And people are always looking at me in the eye and saying hi and caring and very warm and generous. And, you know, I think that that generosity definitely comes from our cultural background. And, you know, so then little by little, they kind of figure their way out. You know, we don't indoctrinate anybody, but they just see that, you know, it's a way of life. It's a way of doing business that may be different than what people are used to.
Awesome. So I'm curious, I kind of want to move into kind of our grand finale. There's the fireworks going off. What most inspires you in co-leading a company, especially in terms of what your potential impact as you look into the future?
I think my brother inspires me a lot. You know, we're very different people, and he is more of a go-getter and a networker, and doesn't allow, you know, won't let a stone get unturned. And I just find that so admirable in comparison to my way of being, which is probably a little bit more introverted. and self-reflective. So we're quite different. You know, he's a sort of yang to my yin in that sense. And that really inspires me because it makes me kind of wake up and be like, okay, what do I got to do today to execute on this grand vision? That's really amazing. I think my team also inspires me because they're always coming up with, you know, new ideas and different ways of seeing things. And I love kind of collaborating. Recently we've been working on a strategy for Q3 and, you know, what our sort of marketing campaign will be. I just enjoy other people a lot. I enjoy ideas that inspires me. Nature, of course, is always the master inspirer. I think the world of ideas is really kind of where I live. And new ideas, new ways of seeing things, making connections, realizations about myself and where I was in the past in terms of my patterns and you know, oh my gosh, I'm like that. And then all of a sudden, you know, you get inspired to just live in a different, you know, live in a different space. And, you know, if you always look at every moment as being an opportunity for growth, your children are the best mirrors of all, I think. So
they certainly don't let you get away with very much, do they?
Yeah. So, you know, when I'm frustrated with them, I kind of like, okay, now what am I really frustrated about? You know, that makes this, you know, and my little 3-year-old toddler's like, Mom, are you mad at me? And I'm like, no, actually I'm not.
I'm glad that he gets that clarification. That's probably a really good thing.
Yeah. Then I have to kind of go back and say, what had made him, you know, why was I mad? You know, him sort of dropping the flower on the floor or whatever.
Right, right. So the future, post-pandemic, mm-hmm. what would you say is maybe potentialized in a way that's different than pre this shared global experience?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, what some of the things we're looking at, and I know we're going to continue, going to keep considering, is this whole traveling business. One of our salespeople just said today, today was a sort of sharing day. And she said, I had a call with, I guess it was like LA Whole Foods. And she said, in the past, I would have had to get up early, take the plane, get the Uber or the rental car, go to the appointment, haul everything over, do all this stuff, you know, have a 20-minute appointment with the buyer, and then do the same thing back, get on a plane and come home. She said, I woke up, had my morning, 9:20 I logged on, 9:30 I had my meeting, had a 20-minute, the product was there at the buyer's, our daily super shops were on the buyer's table. She tasted them. I walked her through it with her broker and her distributor rep. 20-minute meeting, shut off, went great, and that was that. No travel, no carbon footprint, no waste of time. And
is huge. That gives me chills, actually.
Yeah.
That gives me chills.
Gave her a huge realization and gives us a huge realization that, hey, do we actually need to travel this much? Yes, it's nice to have that person-to-person contact, but you know, all the time and money and energy pollution savings we would make to not have to do that. So that's one thing that's being highly considered. You know, more working from home. We're looking at that. We just did a survey of all of our employees in terms of how they feel working at home versus working in the office. We've got a split. Obviously, people want to go back and see each other, but, you know, try and figure out how we're going to post-pandemic be 6 feet apart in terms of working and then also cutting costs and maybe renting part of our space out. So that's another big consideration. And I think really, you know, again, it's sort of focusing on what matters. I think people are realizing, you know, it's just, we spend a lot of, there's a lot of noise. And
either in how we work together, how we interact with one another, and how can we really just kind of assume more positive intent because we're all in this together. You know? Mm. So
I love that. How can we assume more positive intent? What a beautiful way to close our time together, Reem. I think what a beautiful takeaway for all of us to just be self-aware about what are we ascribing? Are we ascribing a positive intention, or are we projecting something else? And just that simple interplay could be game-changing for experience that each of us have.
Right. And I think the other thing this has taught us is, you know, we're taking care of virtual strangers, you know, people are at home and, you know, they feel fine, but there are other people who don't. And there are other people who if they get it, you know, my parents included, my husband has a heart condition, they're at grave risk. And so we have to step outside of ourselves. Mm. You know, and I know you had Carol Sanford on, and it's external considering. She talks about external considering, and we have to do those, you know, it's just like we have no more choice. We don't have a choice anymore, you know, of like, let me, like to your point, you know, focus on the negative streams of thought versus kind of just being present with what is, accepting it, feeling into it, and letting go of all the other stuff. Mm.
Right on. I love that. I'm hopeful myself that this shared experience for the human family will help elevate our sense of we are a family on this planet, and we are capable of change. We've changed in ways none of us would have said was possible in front of this experience. And therefore, that suggests to me, we can't use that as an excuse for not doing things that are better for the health of our planet, the health of each other, dealing with the deep inequities, attending to those things with a sense of our true capacity to do things differently. We obviously can.
Right. Exactly. Well said.
Thank you.
Thank
beautiful
you.
Reem. I am so happy for this time with you. I've known your brother a long time, so it's just so, so dear to get to know you better and learn about your side of the incredible journey inside of NuMe Tea.
Oh, thank you too. Yeah.
So you've been, thank you. You're listening to Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change. I'm your host, Celine Diaris, and with me today has been Reem Hassani, the Chief Brand Officer and co-founder of NuMe Tea. You can locate it in an excellent store in your neighborhood or online, and I highly encourage, if you haven't tried NuMe Tea, a little unabashed promotion, definitely check this company out. They are doing such good things, and so when you're enjoying that tea, you're going to know that you're contributing to a lot more than just their bottom line, because they are generating a lot of good in our world. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
The Regenerative Voices, Elevating Stories, Activating Change podcast series is produced by At the Epicenter, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. The podcast and video recordings are made possible by the generous support of people like you. Make a tax-deductible donation or sign up as a monthly supporter by visiting attheepicenter.com/donate. Support packages start at $1 per month. The podcast series is also sponsored by several corporate and organization sponsors. To become a podcast sponsor, visit attheepicenter.com/contact. to let us know of your interest. If you found this podcast episode insightful and meaningful, please pass it on by sharing it with a friend or colleague who will also enjoy it. Thank you for tuning in, for your support, and for activating change.